Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast. My name is Eric Bryant. I'm one of the executive pastors at Gateway in Austin, Texas. My foundation exists to equip and empower church leaders in reaching new people and raising up leaders. I'm the author of Not Like Me and Fruitful, Becoming Who God Created You to Be. Join me on social media for Through the New Testament for Skeptics and Seekers. And be sure to sign up for my email newsletter where you can receive free resources at ericbryant.org. I'm excited today to have with me on the podcast, Tori Mayo. How are you doing, Tori?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Good. We go way back. We're in the same town, but we haven't been in the same circles for a while. I think back then I was planting a central Austin campus, then quickly shifted over to south, but you're in East Austin. And right. What year did you guys plant?
So we started in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah, so we just celebrated our 11th birthday last month. So yeah.
Happy birthday, man. That's a big deal. Yeah. Yeah, I think I would be curious what the statistics are now post pandemic, but it used to only be, I think it was one out of every five church plants made it to 5 years, and yeah. You're 11. So that's a big deal. Yeah.
Yes, totally. Thank you. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Ed Stetzer just recently said that's the statistic I've always used. He just said that it was off, that came from some random research. But the really interesting thing is that I actually wrote my doctoral dissertation on urban church planting, particularly from like a minority perspective. And what I found when I was researching all of that was that 92% of minorities actually fail within the first 5 or 6 years. And so whatever that number is across the board, it actually ratchets up when you have like an urban context or a minority leader. And so I say that not to be like, oh, but we made it. It's like, gosh, it takes a lot of work and a lot of the Lord's like faithfulness and presence. And so I'm really grateful to even be able to be shepherding God's people like this.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a remarkable statistic. And you come out of Hill Country Bible Church, which has a unique model. I was always fascinated because in some ways, they're up in Northwest Austin. They have launched, I think it's 36 churches, independent churches, and they've tried to start campuses as well. I'm not sure where they're at in the campusing approach, but you are one of those churches, and you've kind of continued in that vein. Talk about where in Austin you're planting, kind of the makeup of your church, and even the process you went through to start it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so we're in Central East Austin is what we would call it. Really intentionally wanted to start and stay kind of by UT's campus because our biggest desire was we didn't want to just grow larger and larger and become the next big thing or something in church world. We actually wanted to multiply. In fact, we have a little phrase we say, we don't celebrate growing, we celebrate going. And so we don't measure our success by numbers. We really measure it by like, how much are we sending? What does that multiplication look like? So kind of planting where we were and where we are allows us to actually have a lot of reach into the younger demographic. The unfortunate part of that is that you lose people very often because you win them to faith or they're brand new in adulthood. And so their faith is very fresh and vibrant. You cultivate that and then you have to send them because they move to Colorado, to Chicago to get a job, right? But yeah, other times you get to intentionally, strategically send them into the nations or into other church plants. And so from the beginning, we wanted that to be our DNA was how do we multiply? The Lord's been really kind to us. We started with 11 people. We did not think we were going to make it. We honestly just wanted to go make a little bit of an impact in that part of the city. One of my church plant coaches told me early on, you don't plant churches, you plant the gospel, and from the gospel comes churches. Yeah. So our kind of thought was always like, okay, if we don't plant a church, at least we can plant the gospel and even aid some of the other churches, even if only a few people come to faith. By God's grace, obviously, and I really mean that, I'm not just using a Christian phrase, it's like by the Lord's grace, it has been just lots of ups and downs, but we're at about 1,000 now on a Sunday. We've been able to plant multiple churches nationally and internationally. We're a really young demographic, but a very multi-ethnic, multicultural demographic. And so it's been kind of great. That's a, both the story and also kind of the DNA makeup of our church.
Yeah. Well, and it's really beautiful. I mean, a good friend of mine, John Short, is there serving with you guys. He's about my age. You know, he just went on and on about just the how beautiful the community is. And in many ways, I mean, part of what I love about the city of Austin, when I first got here, I was amazed at how churches teamed up together. And so yeah. Gateway, our church, and Hill Country, kind of the church that sent you out, has always teamed really well together. Now, John Burke and Tim Hawks have both stepped out of their role as senior pastors. So the next generation, it's up to us, so to speak, to keep it going. But we've actually traded, I don't know if you knew this, but we've actually sent a guy that was on our staff to Hill Country thinking this might be a better fit. And they sent John Short to us. It was like a staff trade. Talk about your experience, because if I am correct, didn't you have to be a resident for 2 years before you planted? And I know you still do that with your model, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So at Hill Country, it's actually a 1 year residency, but yes, exact same idea. So I was working at Hill Country for 3 years. And then they were like, hey, we feel like you're supposed to plant a church, did a year long residency. There's all these like training metrics that they have. One thing, Hill Country is great at several things. One of them is mission and vision, 100%. One of them is also just structure and system. I feel like they're so good at that. And so they added all of these different like elements of like, okay, you feel called, that's great. But like, how do you, you know, set up a integration process in your church to where people don't fall through the cracks? Or how do you run a business meeting? Or how do you, whatever, name the thing. It's like they had some sort of system for, which was phenomenal. And so in that year, you're literally walking through, how do you do, what does it look like to advertise well early on because nobody knows that you exist? What does it look like to not just become a great preacher that exegetes the word? How do you exegete your community and actually do something that is tangible for your people who you're trying to reach or who you have? And just all these different training elements that created like a lot of, I think, health, honestly, where I completely lacked it. Felt passionate, felt gifted in certain areas, even felt called, did not have the equipping, the tools to be able to think about all the organizational side of how to run a church. And so Hill Country is phenomenal at that. And I feel like they continued then in that process of just helping me learn, even after we planted, like, hey, have you thought about doing this? It's like, no, I haven't, because I've never run a church before. Thank you. And it's been like so helpful. So yeah.
That's amazing. And then now someone can apply to be a resident even with you. And I don't know if all 36 churches have kept this up, but it does seem like this is absolutely at the center of your DNA, having planted many churches. What are some other ways that your residency works that you think might be helpful for people to know?
Yeah, so I would say there's probably about three or four maybe unique things. I think that most residencies have a lot of commonalities, which is great because it's needed, right? And so, yeah, our residency is 2 years. One of the reasons we stretched it a year was that what Hill Country started finding out was if somebody was pseudo internal, so they had some relationships at Hill Country, it just made the residency that much better. But if they were completely from the outside coming in, a 1 year residency just probably wasn't enough to build relationships with a team that would then go and leave with the planter. It's really hard when the last 6 months you really need to be on the ground in your target area. That means you have 6 months at the main campus to build all these relationships. No, I mean, unless you're just an off the chart connector, it's really hard to do, right? And so ours is 2 years in part because there's some connecting elements of it. We want you to actually be a part of our church and to be able to know our people, not necessarily so we could put our DNA into you, though we do think there are some things that are hopefully healthy about our church that you'd want to take out, but it's really so that our people can get to know the resident and they preach at the well, they lead ministries and like significant ministries. We're not doing like plug in, like, oh, we need somebody in the nursery, let's put them in there. It's like, no, if we're going to put you in children's, It's because we think that there's a lot of people who may go with you who are currently volunteers or parents, and we want you to get to know them, build relationships so that when you ask them to go with you, they're more likely to go. And so that's one unique thing is like, not only do we fully fund the planter, not only do we like fully train and have all these resources and stuff, but we also like are very, I would say, generous with our most important resource, which is our people. Yeah. So it's like, you know, take as many people. Our last church plant took a staff team member and an elder and also like 43 people or something. And so it's like, gosh, their church immediately starts so healthy because they have people that are able just to run. And so that's one unique thing. I think another unique thing is that one of our desires is to intentionally focus on minorities. We will obviously plant others, but we also feel like, man, a lot of church planting focuses on majority culture planting and majority culture settings, particularly in suburban settings, which, yes and amen, the suburbs need Jesus and we need a lot more of it, particularly even in our city, like in Austin. But also it's like, gosh, what about the inner city? What about all of the, you know, really the reverse gentr or the reverse white flight, the gentrification that's happening where all of a sudden all cultures are coming back into the city? How do you become this multi-ethnic church? Or if you're a minority who often can't raise support as easily or doesn't have the same church background where there's all this structure for you, like how do we actually create spaces to train you, to develop you, to help you become successful? And so part of what we focus on is even, hey, how do you draw out some of that cultural identity? How do you create like a multi-ethnic environment? So that's one kind of realm where there's probably some uniqueness as well. The other thing I would say is that one of the things that we, man, gosh, has been really gracious to us in the midst of really crafting this residency is I feel like we've taken like the best from Hill Country, from city to city. We were an Acts 29 church for a while. We're not any longer, but we're part of that. A lot of like, so Acts 29's assessment and Hill Country's essential training and city to city's like post-launch coaching and all these different realms, and then like put it all together, package it. And the really good benefit about that is I feel like even where I felt maybe there was a little bit of lack in Hill Country's model, not because they were lacking, but just because they didn't have enough time to develop that with me, we've gotten, because we have 2 whole years now, the ability to actually integrate that in. So it's like, man, I wish I understood more of what it looked like to run elder meetings, because I've never been an elder, because I've always been on staff. I don't know what that looks like. So I was just swimming in the waters in some ways, just throwing stuff at the wall, hoping I was being a good elder, right? Whereas like, no, our church planners come in to our elder room and get to see that. They're in our exec team meetings, get to see that. They're meeting with every single ministry at the well. They have like a church planter packet where they essentially give like, hey, here's how you run children's ministry. Here's how you do the connection team or the greeting team. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do this. Branding, marketing, everything. And that way you're kind of walking out with all of this resource. And you could choose now not to use it because some of the things they won't contextualize in your context, right? Or you can choose to use it. And so anyway, that's kind of some of the things that we've tried to integrate in the midst of our model. Because one of our desires is like, gosh, that 80% stat, like you said, whether it's slightly lower or whatever the thing is, the 92% stat that I have, it's like, how can we minimize that to where we are creating the best place possible to perhaps succeed, not just throwing them out and hoping they succeed, but like we're putting hundreds of thousands of dollars into these plants. Like, how do we do that? Well, we got to make sure we have all these systems in place to make sure that happens. So anyway, I'm kind of rambling now, but that's you got me on a soapbox. It's my favorite topic.
I love it. No, it's incredibly beautiful. What through God's help, your team has created. Maybe two more questions. What are some of the, some of the advice you would give someone who's trying to plant in an urban environment or trying to create a multi-ethnic church that you think most churches might be missing? Just a few tips that you think could help.
That's really good. exegete your community. I think that was one of the biggest takeaways of like, I'll use an intentionally silly example, but it's helpful. When I was at a former church of mine, the pastor was using some illustration about community, and he used a scene from Seinfeld, and then he said some other things, and then he used a scene from Friends. I'm sure those are phenomenally produced television programs, but I have never watched the Seinfeld or Friends because I'm Black. Okay.
And he's older.
and that is true too. That is true too. Well, I was old enough for Friends. Seinfeld just before me, but it's like, you know, there is a, it's like culturally that's not the culture I grew up in. I really don't understand the jokes, the innuendos, the little thing. Right. And it's like, okay. So I'm going to now feel subconsciously even like, oh, I don't understand that. Why is everybody else laughing? Okay. And it's going to be hard, I think, to build in that. But if you exegete your community, if you go, oh, okay. Hey, like it's actually okay to use this Seinfeld reference, but instead of now backing it up with the Friends reference, what does it look like to add in another culture or another element? Even if I'm not familiar with it, maybe I can try to bridge by using a football illustration that could be a little bit more culturally across the board or whatever, right?
That's a great.
So I know it's a silly example, but it's like, no, that does trickle into everything else. How I want to be greeted is different than how you want to be greeted. What you see as honor is very different than what I see as honor, et cetera, et cetera. And so a piece of it I would say that maybe some churches could miss is one, having the intentionality of having people with a cultural EQ to be able to assess some of that. Our last church planter was Korean. I grew up in Detroit, grew up in predominantly Black spaces. There's also a lot of Puerto Rican influence. And then obviously white influence just being in America, majority culture in general. So I got those three cultures, I felt like. I got the kind of particularly Puerto Rican, Hispanic culture, Black culture, white culture. I knew nothing about Korean culture, about Asian culture. I'm doing things that are subtly just off-putting or subtly confusing and vice versa. They came from the Korean church and I was like, why are you doing that? Don't do that. And he's like, oh, this is what our church did. Sometimes he was right. And I got to learn from like, oh, this is a better way to do church or to see people. Sometimes I would say the way that we were seeing it was right. And he got to kind of adjust. Sometimes it was just a difference, neither right nor wrong. But now there's people with a higher cultural EQ so that when I meet another Korean, I'm not now making the same mistakes or creating the same confusion. So I think exegeting in the culture, combining that with some cultural intelligence kind of creates this like ability to reach in areas that normally we would desire to reach, but don't know how to reach. It's like, it's actually a lot simpler. People just want to be loved. And we know that. But what if your version of love looks different than my version of love?
Yeah.
What if you want something to write highlighted that I don't? All we got to do is figure that out, and then we can really interact with each other well. And so that's what I would say.
That's a beautiful way to describe it. I was in Los Angeles and was definitely one of the minorities, you know, in my church and the people we're trying to reach. And I remember going up to an Asian woman who was a UCLA professor and saying, I was really disappointed you didn't come up to the front to volunteer to help with the new college group I'm starting. And she said, I would never come up to the front. I think majority culture folks would walk right up and say, I have exactly what you need. I would be happy to help, but only if I'm invited in. And it was just an eye opener for me. I love that idea of cultural EQ. Last question.
Yeah.
For those pastors who have a desire to maybe they have enough people from a neighborhood, most I would say probably assume, okay, let's start a campus. And there's certain advantages to that. You've not gone that direction. Talk about maybe some of the advantages of an independent church. Why have you gone that direction? And what advice could you give to a pastor who's considering their next step?
Yeah, that's so good. Thank you for asking that. Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is I genuinely think that the campus model does great things and can work. And so I'm not anti-campus model. However, I do think that independent individual churches can genuinely meet the needs of their communities a lot quicker and a lot maybe more sensitively than a campus model. In a campus model, you have some other church at some other area that is helping to direct the sermons, the music that's being picked, depending on how tied you are to the main campus. It's like even the graphics and things like that. And it's like, well, what if your congregation is a little bit older, my congregation is a little bit younger, and now all of a sudden the way that we see beauty is starting to shift and what a good graphic for you is different than mine, yada, yada, right? Then you go into sermons, it's like, okay, if I'm in easy example, in 2020, not only do we have COVID, we had all of the racial unrest and disharmony in the country, and our church did a Justice and Mercy series. And while a lot of churches were trying to figure out what to do, because it was the first time they were interacting, it's like, gosh, we've had to do this for the past multiple years. Entering into that series was really easy for us because we had already readied our people to receive that. It didn't feel strange. It didn't feel like we were responding to the culture. It just felt like we were trying to disciple people within the culture. I know other churches that tried to do a series like that, and it almost divided, or it did divide their church, because their church wasn't ready for that. Independent churches can create readiness in their areas in the ways that I think at times campus churches can have a harder time doing because of a lot of the pull towards the central or the main campus. And so what we've loved about the autonomy of individual churches is just that. The other thing is that I just think more people have, I do not think I'm the greatest communicator, the greatest leader. I think that God's called me for a specific church, specific time. I would like to think I'm a better communicator than I probably am. But I'm like, other people have the gift of communication too. And even if they maybe don't have as much whatever as I do, rhetorical skill or eloquence on this thing or cultural intelligence or whatever it might be, it's like, is that what God needs for them to be fruitful in an area? Maybe God wants a bigger intellect in a different area. Maybe God wants somebody that's a little bit more practical in a different area. And I lack both of those things because I just feel very relational and like, hey, let's just go do this, right? And I use too much Ebonics in my preaching anyway. And so it's like, man, in that area, what if God would have something different? To plant an autonomous church would be to allow that pastor to even begin to shift to a cultural narrative that is able to be received there. And if I was controlling it, I don't live in Cedar Park. I don't live in Buda. I don't live in Arkansas or some other, right? It's like, I don't know actually what that's like. I'm kind of assuming that everybody's the same, and that's just not true. So that's been our experience of getting to do that, is you really see other people raised up in ways that I think it's harder. I don't think impossible, but harder in a campus model. I think there are more lead pastors out there than we would like to think. I think there are more elders out there. I think there are more youth group leaders and people that want to rise up, that planting autonomous churches forces that rising up in a way that at times campuses don't, because you can depend on the main campus. That's some of the thoughts I have on that.
I really appreciate it, Tori. I think you guys are doing a great thing. The website, thewellaustin.com. Thanks for all you're doing, advancing the kingdom. Great to catch up with you. Thanks for spending the time.
Man, thank you, Eric, brother. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for joining us on the Post-Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.